Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, June 5th, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Business Development, Tillamook Brings Joy, Jobs to Decatur. Factory marks grand opening by scooping ceremonial ice cream by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Leslie Hunt has a job many kids will want to add to their list of career goals. I'm an ice cream operator, she said. It's a dream job. Hunt's job is to make ice cream at the local Tillamook ice cream plant. And everybody loves ice cream, she said. It's hard to have a top five, but my number one is butter pecan. Hunt greeted approximately 200 community members who were invited to visit the new Tillamook ice cream plant in Decatur. Instead of a traditional ribbon-cutting ceremony, local officials and Tillamook representatives hosted a ceremonial scooping, adding different flavors of ice cream into a Tillamook bowl. Ruben Urrutia, director of plant operations, added the finishing touch, a cherry. And so, with the cherry on top, it's now official, said Mike Bever, Tillamook's chief supply chain officer. And so, Reuben, we officially turn the plant over to you and ask you to get it to full capacity as soon as possible. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf admits she has become a Tillamook addict. I love ice cream, but I don't like fruit in my ice cream, she said, and their cheese has made a huge difference in my hot dish recipes. Although having ice cream made in the center of the city is exciting to city officials, the impact it is having in the area around the plant is refreshing as well. You drive down the street and you get happy, Moore Wolf said. The transformation it has made to this neighborhood is huge. The plant is located along Martin Luther King Jr. Drive between Marietta Street and Wabash Avenue, in a more than 100-year-old building that most recently had been used for the same purpose by Prairie Farms. The base blends of ice cream flavors begin with vanilla, chocolate, and extra chocolate. Nearly 36 flavors of ice cream will eventually be produced at the plant. They will be packaged in 3-gallon tubs used by scoop shops, as well as family-sized cartons that are found in grocery stores. Based in Oregon, the farmer-owned Tillamook County Creamery Association purchased the facility from Prairie Farms. 2 years later, ice cream is being packaged and shipped from Decatur, distributed to stores throughout the country. The plant transformation took more than $67 million to complete. It employs more than 30 workers, some 40 more in the next year or two. The plant is expected to ship 15.5 million gallons of ice cream annually by the end of 2026, feeding the growing popularity of Tillamook products. The company began producing ice cream in the 1940s. Cheese, the company's original product, began production more than 100 years ago. Quite honestly, today we sell more households in the eastern part of the U.S. than we do in the western part of the U.S., Tillamook's president and CEO David Booth said about its ice cream sales. We have the fastest growing ice cream brand in the family size section in the United States, and we're the third largest brand out there today. According to Bever, the move to Decatur was not an easy project. There were so many unknowns, so many challenges, he said. Factors included the condition of the existing facility. It wasn't just about the building, but it was about the surrounding area as well, he said. We knew that was going to require a very different and unique relationship with the city. Having worked with his local economic development corporation, Bever said one of his first calls was to the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County. Now I know how an EDC is supposed to work, he said. Nicole Bateman knows what she's doing. And that started a relationship with the city and the city management that has been absolutely fantastic. Nicole Bateman, president of the Decatur EDC and a German chocolate ice cream fan, was one of the first people Tillamook approached before deciding to add a facility to the area. Oftentimes in communities, they reach out to Economic Development Office because we're the great connectors, she said. Confidentiality is important to the EDC, as well as the potential business. They try to get the real scoop on what's going on in the community. I know that sounds cheesy, Bateman said, pun intended. The community is also important to Tillamook. Where we have plants, we like to be heavily involved in the community and be a part of the fabric of the community, Bever said. Tillamook announced Wednesday it is partnering with the general contractor, J.P. Cullen, to provide $50,000 in donations to local charities. The Decatur Park District will receive $20,000 for local youth recreation and community events, such as Trees on Tees. Another $20,000 will be given to the food security efforts of the Good Samaritan Inn. The Macon County Fair will receive $5,000 to support its livestock and open class shows. The ice cream company also is committing $5,000 to the Northeast Community Fund, located across the street from the plant, to support its farm-to-fund events. They're obviously a good neighbor for us, and we're excited to help support them as well, Bever said. The new addition already has begun to change the neighborhood, officials said. We know that their unique culture is really going to bring a new vibe to Decatur, Bateman said. Along with free scoops of ice cream, including the flavors orange and cream, Oregon strawberry, mudslide, and salty caramel pretzel, samples of the company's various cheese selections and cream cheese choices were available during Wednesday's ceremony. We are just so proud of this heritage of 116 years on the Oregon coast making cheese and still following those same processes, said Josh Archibald, executive chef of culinary development. But ice cream is so fun and so exciting. Tillamook's plans are to add more factory space for the other products. The mayor said she has a difficult time explaining to school children the various products made in Decatur. When I go to schools and I talk about the ice cream company that's moving here, they get it, Moorwolf said. This is something people can embrace and taste and get excited about, and we all do. Mark Densler, Illinois Manufacturers Association president and CEO, is a fan of the butter pecan ice cream. But I've been told the peaches and cream is amazing, he said. Densler is a Decatur native and understands the importance of Tillamook's addition to the area. This is an amazing success story for Decatur and Macon County. Decatur's such a welcoming community to them, he said. It's jobs, it's economic development for the city, and who doesn't love ice cream? During the ceremony, Bateman recognized June as National Dairy Month. She also revealed she grew up on a dairy farm. It was a very exciting moment when my childhood and professional career collided, she said. I also knew how well their culture would resonate with the community. In 2022, shortly before the news broke of Tillamook's arrival, Bateman checked the ice cream shelves at a local grocery store to find a fully stocked freezer. Then, when I stopped by on my way home to see how widely the news had circulated, only a few containers remained. They were tipped over, and it was completely disheveled, she said. That was the response I had hoped for. Decatur got the message. This article is accompanied by 6 full-color photographs attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first, which shows a man scooping ice cream while others look on, is captioned, Edwin Morales, Vice President of Manufacturing, joins other employees and local officials in the ceremonial scooping in lieu of a traditional ribbon cutting during the grand opening event for the new Tillamook Ice Cream Plant in Decatur on Wednesday, June 4th. The second photo, which shows 2 men behind a very full buffet table, is captioned Tom Felstead and Chad Shackelman of the construction company J.P. Cullen sample the Tillamook cream cheese flavors during the grand opening event for the new Tillamook ice cream plant in Decatur on Wednesday, June 4th. The next photo shows the same table and is captioned Mallory Wentworth, representing Congresswoman Nikki Brzezinski, reacts to the selection of Tillamook cheeses during the grand opening event for the new Tillamook ice cream plant in Decatur on Wednesday, June 4th. The next photo is captioned Nicole Bateman, President and CEO of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, speaks during the grand opening event for the new Tillamook ice cream plant in Decatur on Wednesday, June 4th. The next photo is captioned, "Justin Fuller takes an ice cream scoop order from Decatur Public Schools Superintendent Rochelle Clark during the grand opening event for the new Tillamook ice cream plant in Decatur on Wednesday, June 4th. And the final photo is a close-up of three small containers of cream cheese, different colors, and is captioned, "Guests sample the Tillamook cream cheese flavors during the grand opening event for the Tillamook ice cream plant in Decatur on Wednesday, June 4th. Illinois, energy reform falls flat. Electric bills rise, frustrate advocates. By Andrew Adams, Capital News Illinois, Springfield. Heading into the end of the legislative session, consumer advocates, renewable energy industry groups, and environmental advocates were hopeful about a bill that would have overhauled Illinois' energy industry. It would have been the largest energy reform in years, touching almost every part of the state's electricity sector. Some said it would have been as significant as the 2021 Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, the law that requires fossil fuel burning power plants to shutter by 2045. But lawmakers declined to take up the bill, kicking the can down the line on energy reform for the second time this year, after initially punting on the issue during the January lame duck session. It was a confluence of factors, Christine Nannicelli, a Sierra Club organizer and longtime environmental advocate, told Capital News Illinois. To a certain extent, it was a product of running out of time. Lawmakers had a fairly large to-do list going into the final day of the legislative session, including approving the multiple bills that make up the state's annual budget and a large reform package dealing with public transit in northern Illinois. That transit legislation was also a high priority for environmental groups and labor organizations, both of which were central to the fight over energy reform. In addition to environmentalists and labor, the bill was being negotiated by representatives of the governor's office, major utilities, and representatives of the renewable energy industry. The push for an energy reform package grew out of a growing sense of concern that the state won't be able to meet its ambitious climate goals. The rise of power-hungry data centers has placed significant demands on the electric grid at a time when the supply of electricity is stagnant or falling. This situation has already led to higher prices. This month, prices on residential electric bills are increasing by an average of $10.60 per month for Commonwealth Edison customers in northern Illinois, and by $45 per month for Ameren Illinois customers downstate. While Illinois lawmakers couldn't do anything to stop those increases, the prospect of prices staying high for longer has frustrated some advocates. "We're gonna lick our wounds," Anna Markowski, who works on Midwestern issues for the Natural Resource Defense Council, said in an interview. Signals that negotiations were heating up and possibly breaking down came 2 weeks before session ended on Saturday. A proposal from environmental groups to impose new costs on data centers drew fierce public criticism. A letter urging Governor J.B. Pritzker to oppose the proposal was released by a coalition of interest groups, including the AFL-CIO, Climate Jobs Illinois, Illinois Manufacturers Association, and Constellation Energy, the last of which operates all the state's commercial nuclear power plants. A similar letter was signed by several economic development officials from around the state. The provision, which would have required data centers and other large electric customers to fund new energy developments to offset their demand, was dropped from the bill shortly after. While the data center provision drew the most public controversy, other parts of the bill were being negotiated until the last minute, reflecting a lack of consensus among activists, industry groups, and other stakeholders. The bill was also set to outline a battery storage incentive program, similar to how the state incentives solar energy. Advocates for the would-be program said it would spur historic levels of private sector investment in renewable energy. The bill would have required 6 gigawatts of energy storage developments over the next decade, with half by 2030. This is in line with recommendations from an Illinois Commerce Commission report that lawmakers commissioned earlier this year in anticipation of this bill, and in line with an analysis done by the Union of Concerned Scientists last year. Nannicelli said, "This provision was opposed by some labor organizations, contributing to the demise of the bill." As of Saturday afternoon, the bill drew overall opposition from at least one union, although several others indicated via witness slips that they were neutral on the bill. These are critical issues to get right for consumers and working families that shouldn't be forced by a deadline. Joe Duffy, executive director of the labor-affiliated group Climate Jobs Illinois, said in a statement, "We look forward to continuing conversations over the summer to take the time needed to get it right." That program also drew serious concerns from some industrial groups. The Illinois Manufacturers Association worried the rate increases to pay for the battery program would have cost businesses too much. An estimate from the American Petroleum Institute, who represents businesses that operate refineries, pegged the cost of the program over the next 11 years at about $9 billion. My main argument at the macro level is that it's very expensive for very little return, Jim Watson, who handles API's efforts in Illinois, said Saturday, and it does little to address capacity issues. An analysis from the Solar Energy Industry Association, a solar trade group, found the savings from a battery storage program would outweigh the costs, saving consumers money in the long run. A solar industry insider said lawmakers will stay at the table to reduce energy prices as federal support is incredibly unlikely under the current political climate. Unfortunately, Illinois' spring legislative session ended without a lasting solution to the continued and unprecedented energy cost increases that are taking money out of families' wallets, Leslie McCain, head of the Illinois Solar Energy and Storage Association, said in a statement. While this was a disappointing conclusion to the session, we have every reason to believe leaders in Springfield remain committed to moving Illinois' clean energy transition forward. Several other provisions of the bill drew significant attention as the pitch made its rounds in Springfield. One such aspect of the bill would have outlined an integrated resource plan process for the Illinois Commerce Commission. This would have been a major shift at the ICC, giving the regulatory agency more authority over the state's electric grid and more ability to alter the emissions reduction goals of the state. Since the passage of CEJA in 2021, the ICC has become a primary enforcer of the state's climate goals. But, like other elements of the plan, it faced pushback from business groups. The Manufacturers Association was concerned that lawmakers would be ceding too much authority to state regulators. While the bill contained several other provisions, another major issue on the table was lifting the state's long-standing moratorium on new nuclear power developments. 2 years ago, the state loosened restrictions, allowing for the development of small nuclear reactors, the type that has only become possible in recent years thanks to technological breakthroughs. Those remain in the early stages of commercial development. Ending the nuclear moratorium for large nuclear reactors was one of the least controversial issues in the bill. While some environmentalists were opposed, others did not feel strongly about it. Business groups were broadly in favor of it. Like other aspects of the bill, it may return in a future legislative session, but for a broader reform package, it's back to the drawing board. Environmental and consumer advocates, union organizers, utilities, and energy companies all indicated that negotiations would continue into the summer, and that there is, broadly, a desire from lawmakers to move forward in some way to lower energy prices raised by data centers' demand. But what that could be, and when it might happen, is now up in the air. If you kick the can down the road, even a month, things could have pretty significant impact, Nannicelli said. We need to make a clear decision. Who's going to pay for these costs of unprecedented load growth that's coming in large part from data centers? 2020 to revisit 2010 Alton murder case by Dominic Ginetti, The Telegraph, Alton. It's been 7 years since Roger Carroll was convicted of murdering Bonnie Woodward. The Alton mother went missing in 2010. After the case went cold, it took another 10 years before a suspect was charged and the case moved forward with a trial, ultimately leading to Carroll's sentencing of 65 years in prison. Now, Woodward's case is the subject of a new 2020 episode on ABC that will air this Friday, June 6th, at 8 p.m. Show representatives reached out to the Alton Telegraph for coverage information. It was a case that shocked the communities of two Metro East counties. And there wasn't just a murder at the center of it all. There was also abuse, kidnapping, and threats to kill. Here are important things to know about the case. Who was Bonnie Woodward? Bonnie Woodward worked at a nursing home in Alton. In 2010, she was living with her boyfriend and stepdaughter, Heather Woodward, when she left work and was never seen again. Heather Woodward would also go missing, but later turned up unharmed. A male suspect authorities looked into early in their investigation would become the center of the case's attention. However, law enforcement didn't have enough evidence to move forward at the time. His name was Roger Carroll, and it turns out he kept Heather Woodward at his house, barring her from outside communication via phones or computers. The burn pile. As the cold case began to heat up, authorities focused on Carroll once again. Authorities learned that Carroll didn't act alone. His 16-year-old son, Nathan Carroll, also was involved. Because Nathan Carroll was a minor at the time, his testimony to a grand jury came with full immunity. And now, as a legal adult, he has filled everyone in as to how he and his father kidnapped and killed Bonnie Woodward. Nathan, now 25, described seeing what he believes to be Woodward's body after hearing gunshots at his father's home in rural Jerseyville, the Alton Telegraph wrote in 2020. Nathan was 16 years old at the time. Fifth person dies in Chatham crash by Beth Hunsdorfer, Capital News, Illinois, Chatham. An 8-year-old boy is the most recent casualty of a car crash at a Chatham daycare April 28th. Bradley Lund, 8, had been in a Springfield hospital since the collision at Why Not Outdoors 5 weeks ago, according to Sangamon County Coroner Jim Allman. Bradley sustained multiple blunt force injuries when a black Jeep driven by Marianne Akers, 44, of Chatham, drove into the lower portion of the building that housed the gymnasium and out the other side, striking children who were playing inside. Allman confirmed that Bradley died Monday morning. Ainsley Johnson, 8. Catherine Corley, 7. Alma Buhner-Kempe, 7, all of Chatham, and counselor Riley Britton, 18, of Springfield, also died as a result of the crash. Police said Akers submitted blood after the crash to determine whether she was under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Those toxicology screenings were negative, ISP confirmed last month. ISP Director Brendan Kelly said during a news conference in May that the crash could have been caused by a medical emergency. The death remains under investigation by the Sangamon County Coroner and the Illinois State Police, Allman said in his emailed release. The Sangamon County State's Attorney's Office will review the investigation, then will provide an update, according to an ISP spokesman. No charges have been filed against Akers. Bradley is the son of Daniel Lund, assistant principal in the Ball Chatham School District, and Cynthia Reisman Lund, legislative director for the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Courts. Man not guilty by reason of insanity by Tony Reed, Decatur. The Decatur man, who police say tried to stab his mother and her husband to death, has been found not guilty of their attempted murders by reason of insanity. The verdict was delivered by Macon County Circuit Court presiding judge Thomas Griffith after a stipulated bench trial May 30th for defendant Quincy L. Thompson, 45. A dispositional hearing is now scheduled for June 12th, when the judge will decide what will happen to Thompson. He has remained in the custody of the Macon County Jail since being arrested on the day of the knife attacks, which date to the morning of September 14th, 2023, at the victim's home in the 800 block of West Division Street. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department quotes the mother's 72-year-old husband as telling officers he had got out of bed to get some coffee in the kitchen when Thompson arrived clutching a pocket knife. Officer Tyler Nottingham, who signed the affidavit, described what the husband said happened next. Quincy came into his room and started to stab him in the face. The husband said this was an unprovoked attack and there was no verbal argument prior to being stabbed by Quincy. Thompson's 72-year-old mother reportedly heard her husband's screams and saw the stabbing after rushing to the kitchen. Nottingham said the mother described trying to shield her husband and stop the frenzied assault by jumping on top of her husband. She said at this point, Quincy began stabbing her, Nottingham added. The parents were both suffering from multiple stab wounds in the face, hands, neck, and back area. Judge Griffith ruled there were sufficient facts presented to prove that Quincy had engaged in conduct with intent to cause the deaths of the victims, as laid out in the twin attempted murder charges. The charges had been set for a May 12th jury trial, until the prosecution and defense agreed to the May 30th hearing, which took the form of a stipulated bench trial. This is a legal proceeding, where both the prosecution and defense agree on the essential facts of the case after Thompson had been examined by doctors. Two further charges alleging aggravated battery and two other charges accusing Quincy of aggravated domestic battery had been dismissed by the judge. Regional weather forecast. A shower in the morning, otherwise cloudy today. Little or no sunshine, with a 40% chance of precipitation and average relative humidity 70%. Drying conditions poor. Rain and a thunderstorm tonight. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review dated Thursday, June 5th, 2025. Please stay tuned.